The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday with Cheddar and Michael here in studio with me. There's only one place to start here, Cheddar. This is the breaking news from last night. Leash GAA Twitter account. Senior Hurling Selection Committee has proposed Eddie Brennan as the new Leash Senior Hurling Manager. The Leash GAA Executive Committee will now be putting his name forward at the next county committee meeting. This is fantastic news. This really kind of perked me up last night. Like, I mean, this is an 8-time All-Ireland winner. This is a man who's not just coming straight in off the back of the 8 All-Irelands. He served his time with under-21s. He's coming through now. Obviously, has a long punditry kind of background as well, and always well able to sum up a game and talk sense. Like, I mean, we should be excited about this in Leash, Cheddar, no?
I look at it in the positive way first, Woolley, I suppose. First of all, he's a young manager coming in. I think that brings fresh energy into it. And obviously, you know, his name, you know, certainly carries, you know, some serious kudos with that. So there's a lot of positives about that. But look, I'd say, it's not necessarily the name as such. It's the quality of his management team. It's his vision and on hurling, and that's really important, because there's some really important things that need to happen in Leash hurling, and particularly with the team at the minute. But look, I look at it positively, and but probably would want to see the management team in that. But I'll just swing that around, Woolley. You know, I never really want to look at personalities per se in management teams. You know, what needs to happen in the county first, and what needs to happen with your county team, and, you know, what the immediate needs with the team, and then you pick your manager based on that. So look, I've just heard about it last night, and you know,
were you surprised?
Will I look at it positively? Well, look, there was a number of people internally in the county that were, I know, that were interested in them. Look, I've been a little bit away from Leash hurling in the last year as such, and not as close to it as I used to be. But one of the things I think that I would like to see is that the management team would contain a number of, you know, serious Leash people, and that those people would be upskilled themselves as coaches to serve Leash into the future. So, you know, there's a couple of knock-on things that I would like to see in this. But look, it's a welcome development that a player of Eddie's stature, you know, sees Leash, you know, as a management opportunity as such. And, you know, certainly there's massive potential in Leash. And, you know, Eddie knows the scene in Leash pretty well. Eddie worked in Port Leash for a number of years, lived there for a number of years. So it's not as if he's coming in unknown to things and not known by the players and that. You know, obviously he's very well known by the players, but just locally and that. So he will know the local scene and that.
Hopefully not too well, considering he was a guard in Port Leash for all that time.
Yeah, that was coming his way.
There might be other reasons now for contacting Eddie. But I would say, look, the first critical thing I think is that there's a number of, you know, really, really good players that are just not on the panel at the minute for various reasons, and some good reasons. And I think that's the first thing. Typical of the Leash, Westmeath, Carlow to this world, you know, you have a small number of probably quality players that can play at intercounty level, and you need everybody. And I think that's the first challenge that the management team need to face. Get everybody on board here, and then, you know, you can see where you are. But there is serious potential, and there's some serious young players coming through in Leash that I think will really, really add to it.
So you'll have to get on the phone to Eddie and give him directions to Zane Keenan's house and go up and have a cup of tea with the mother and father like you did, Cheddar.
But I was going to say, I think the two huge positives are his name is going to get players that are within the county who aren't hurling.
Exactly.
Hurling.
And that's what Mick O'Dwyer did with us that time. And you need that, yeah.
Like, any footballers who are on the fence, they changed codes and they came to us. And we needed it at the time. And that's a huge plus. And also, he played under the best manager to ever manage the game. And he has to pick up things over the years that work within the dressing room and work within management.
Yeah.
And if he brings that to Leash, like, I can only see them being like going forward in the next few years.
One concern I would have about that, and this is about all the Kilkenny lads under Cody. Number one, they've only ever played under one manager. Yeah. Now, he was obviously brilliant. Now, the other point would they all only ever would have played under one game plan, and the game has moved away a little bit from that. Yeah. Do you know, so like it's interesting to see what Eddie's philosophy on the game is, and you know what worked for Kilkenny might not necessarily work with the players Laois have, Cheddar, because I don't think they have those big full forwards, or do you know that the long ball game might work?
No, that's exactly what I meant at the start. Wally, like, you need to see what's the needs of this team at the minute, and you know one of those is the method of play, the philosophy of hurling and the way the team's going to play. And if it's changes from previous, of course, convincing those players that this is the best way of going, you know, it's a serious challenge. But I take Michael's point, probably more so that Eddie sort of knows what's needed to reach the top level and, you know, would bring that level of knowledge on board.
Yeah, or, psychologically.
Psychologically. I think the method of play is really, really important because hurling has certainly moved on a lot in the last couple of years. I think just looking at the team's objectives, but in Division 1B, obviously to be steady in there and, you know, maybe get to a league quarter final would be a major boost. But the serious challenge is the Joe McDonagh winning that and getting back into the Leinster Championship. You know, it should be well within the team's reach if everything was going right in that. And look, I expect him to see Eddie bring a huge level of organisation and that to the team, and a complete understanding of what motivates the team and that. And that's based on his knowledge there already. I'd say outside of that, you know, for Laois hurling, it certainly needs the development plan to kick off, because the issue with the Laois and the Westmeath and the Carlos and all of these counties is just the, you know, there's not a high enough volume of quality players that are able to play at inter-county level, and you know, to do that you need a really comprehensive and radical development plan, and it's not there at the minute. So you know, in parallel with Eddie coming on board, I think it would be brilliant to actually see that, and I think that would lift Laois hurling more than anything.
Yeah, exactly. And they had Niall Rigney, Declan Conroy, who I know both of them personally, and Eamon Jackman, who I don't know personally. They were, and I think Laois County Board deserves a lot of credit for leaving ex-players like these, you know, to pick someone that they think is suitable, because I often think that there's a lot of spoofer managers out there and they can bamboozle County Board kind of secretary or treasurer, you know, that don't mean hugely disrespectful, but like you can get all sorts of kind of technical stuff and bamboozle them, but like you won't pull the wool over ex-players' eyes. And I think that was a good move, obviously, Michael, from the Laois County Board to have respected ex-players like the three lads picking the manager or proposing the manager.
Brilliant, Wooly, because you always hear the interviews process going through the County Board and picking managers, and you'd love to be a fly on the wall sometimes saying, what are they saying, like this, these 5-year plans, and then they come in, you see some spoofing going on, like it's ridiculous. So like when you have the players there, and obviously you see Eddie and you see his punditry, and he seems to have a lot of common sense. He's done the back row, as you said, he's worked with the 21 for a few years, and he, with the history of his playing career as well, he just seems like a great mix. Like it seems like a decent fella, and when you have the backing of the players, who you can't really spoof players, to be honest, which is much as County Boards. If you have the backing of the players, I think it's a great appointment.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Young with a track record. And John Sugarover, the footballers, is so good. Hopefully Kerry don't come looking for him, because he's been outstanding. And just two young fellas who can relate to the players and are hungry and want to prove themselves. I think that's a big thing. They're not on this managerial merry-go-round that you see where, you know, like, I mean, it's one after another county, and managers don't seem to care which county or club they manage once they're back into another job.
I think that's a really important point, Willie. There's a lot of people around the sort of management merry-go-round, and just look, players know that. They know straight away who they are, and look, it doesn't motivate them. I think how your county senior team does is hugely important within the county. At the end of the day, they're your flagship team that all young people aspire to. So, you know, the strength of your county team and how it's doing at that is really important to the development of the game at grassroots level, even for coaches and that. And that's one of the things that, you know, I would like to see happen, that even within the management team, that, you know, ex players are part of that, and that they upskill themselves to become better coaches as they go along. You mentioned the committee, the selection committee. I mean, Eamon Jackman is coaching Castlecomer at the minute. Niall Rigney coached James Stevens to a county championship and was coaching Doon last year. Declan Rye's done huge work with his club in Rosenallis. So, you know, the three people that were involved have been involved heavily at the coalface and are, you know, their coaching skills themselves, you know, are very, very high. So they were good people to actually make these type of selections in the first place.
Yeah, definitely were. Right, lads, abusive letters has been the topic of conversation all this year, started with Eamon Fitzmaurice. Now, interestingly, the hurling managers have gotten on board John Kiely and Eamon Donoghue have both done their media this week and obviously will be asked about Fitzmaurice, you know, the letters or whatever. So John Kiely, interestingly, has been getting them this year, even when Limerick have been winning. And Donoghue says that he's been getting them since he started with Galway, which is interesting considering he got them to an All-Ireland semi-final they should have won, then won an All-Ireland and now is back in the mix. You wonder, Jesus, he is not in the position where he should be getting these. Have you any experience with this or receiving them? I haven't, I have to be honest, and I was just saying on the football show and like, surely if I haven't got one, I was saying we're a very tolerant supporters in Laois. So maybe it's just not a thing in Laois, maybe it's a cultural thing, and it happens in counties. I don't know. What's your experience of it, Cheddar? I'll ask you first because you've been a player and a manager.
There's a lot of it going on. I think, you know, just don't give it any oxygen, any of that sort of stuff, put it in the bin. I think when you look at managers, you know, one of the traits that managers have is a huge self-belief in themselves, and particularly the better ones, and they're very, very sure of what they're doing, and you know, this type of stuff, to just disregard it, to be honest, which I wouldn't even give it any more oxygen, you know, than it needs. Managers, you need to be a little bit thick-skinned about it as well. You can't be too precious about yourself. And you know, I think that's where society has gone woolly, to be honest with you. I think, incidentally, I think, you know, some of the reasons that we're getting this is by the, you know, I think there's quite poor sports journalism at the minute, which leaves a sort of a vacancy or a gap for this thing to happen. And it's probably in general society. I mean, the level, if we look at politics and that, the level of investigative journalism in politics at the minute is an all-time low. And it allows a lot of people then to spoof off whatever they feel like without absolutely any facts or anything like that backing it up. And I'd say in sports journalism, and I know this from, you know, some people that I know myself that are involved in national newspapers, that for them to get their piece into the paper now, there needs to be a sort of a scoop rather than investigative analysis of what's going on and a piece being presented like that. So there's pressure now on journalists to actually get their you know, half page in the paper, even if for national papers. And, you know, I think that is a big change here. And I think, you know, when you look at that, that allows a lot of opportunity then for people to mouth off what they want to say. That's not saying there are some people that provide really good analysis, even in the letters and that. And you will get some really, really good pieces and really good constructive criticism about things. And you know, you'd take all that on board because you never stop learning about things. But the real serious stuff, you just disregard it, throw it in the bin.
Have you got them?
Look, you everybody gets them. Everybody. I mean, we were playing.
Have I never got one of these? I nearly want one now. I feel like I'm left out. Now, I get a lot of abuse on Twitter. I was saying on the football show that this is an older generation because young people don't write letters. Like, would anyone under the age of 40 write a letter? I don't think so. They'd go on Facebook or they'd go on Twitter and they'd get straight to you.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this must be an older generation that are used to writing letters, or maybe, I don't know, is a letter more personal and a better way of insulting somebody? I don't really know.
Like, as a player, will you get abuse on the pitch? You know, it's part and parcel, but I love it. I love getting abuse and I love getting the cheers as much, you know. It means you're doing a good job. But like, the GAA is full of brilliantly passionate people, and like, when you win, everyone's elated, and when you lose, everyone's been guilty of having a bitch in the car about a manager or at home with your family or in a pub somewhere. But to take time out of your day and sit down and write a letter threatening somebody, you're just a scumbag, or there's something wrong in your head. Like there's no other way to put it. Like, you know, you're threatening somebody, you're taking the time to write a letter, you're picturing the bodyguard here cutting letters out, and it's wrong. There has to be something going on with that person, and plus they're anonymous, so like, it's a real cowardly thing to do. You know, it's like a keyboard warrior slating somebody online.
Yeah, they're basically keyboard warriors for elderly people.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking about constructive things, I'm talking about like the threatening.
Yeah,
like,
well, Fitzmaurice said one player got a letter and says you should jump off a cliff. Now, I mean, I was saying on the football show, the letter's not saying I'm going to push you off a cliff. It's not a threat. It's just, it's just stupidity. It's not even to be taken seriously.
I think, there's a lot of serial sort of abuse of people out there at the minute. We know that. Look, this is not news to us here. Maybe the level of them that Eamon got and that John got is, but I would have said, I would have said nothing at all. You know, we're thick-skinned enough to be able to take that on board. We know where it's coming from. It's not constructive. They're probably going to, if you disregard it, they're going to jump on somebody else.
And to be from rival clubs probably too, Cheddar, which is, would resent you to begin with even getting the job.
You know, you might have threw an old slap on some fella a number of years ago and he decides he's going to take it back out. So you wouldn't want to pay too much attention to it. But I do go back to that point. I think if sports journalism, and I examined a couple of people from that, was constructive in its criticism, that it would take away a lot of the oxygen that these people seem to feed off of, and it would, you know, I think there've been left a vacuum for sort of social media journalism to actually take its place.
Right, you think that might encourage it a little bit?
Well, I think so. I think if you refer often to Christy O'Connor, big fan of him, and you know, if he makes a point, he backs it up with some really, really good analysis. So somebody cannot just jump on his point and you know, push it further without something to back it up in that. Again, I'll just go back to the point. Don't feed any more oxygen into this. There's enough of people around doing this type of stuff. And look, this is nothing. There's a whole series of walks of life that this is happening in, particularly probably in politics and in music and, you know, a whole lot of other walks of life. This is not new. Yeah. Just disregarded, trod in the bin.
Imagine Jim Gavin's house. You know. None from Dublin, they're from all over.
All from my house.
None from Dublin, are you surprised?
So, come here, you mentioned Christy O'Connor. Christy was back at it again this week. Christy, like, this could be top of the show, sponsored by Christy O'Connor at this stage, because I love stats. I love them. I don't just love stats for no reason. I love stats that are kind of backing up something. Do you know, I love obviously stats are just nonsense on their own, but like, if you just get loads of stats, you can build brilliant analysis around it. If you understand what you're talking about, you can use them to back it up. So he's talking about goals, and we talked on Monday here, myself and Damien, about Shane O'Donnell's goal and how it wasn't on when he got the ball. It absolutely wasn't on. And so many times in the game now, you see lads who are happy to take a point in that scenario, but he just wanted a goal. And when he wanted a goal that badly, he ended up being able to get a goal, and he rode two challenges and then dummied David Burke and then dropped it on the ground and stuck it under Skell. It was a thing of beauty. Arguably one of the best goals you'll see, well, probably the best goal you'll have seen all year. Not this, like, obviously some picturesque goals are like more like Peter Duggan's, like that rattled the back of the net. But Shane O'Donnell's, when you analyse the whole thing from start to finish, interestingly, he said Christy had that. I didn't know this at all. That Shane O'Donnell was a defender at under 16, under 17. He was a cornerback.
That doesn't surprise me.
I didn't know that though. Like, I mean, this is so. This was in St. Flannan's Harty Cup team in 2011. So he's a cornerback in 2011 and he's scoring a hat-trick in an All-Ireland final in 2013 from full forward, which I just didn't know that. But that's just a little kind of by the by. We're talking about goals being scored and goal poachers like Lark Horbitz and whether they're still in the game. And he had a little bit about John McGrath's father, Pat. And John McGrath scored 16 goals in his last 24 league and championship games. So he's a poacher. Yeah. He's a lad. This is like the Eddie Brennan who we talked about. This is a lad who lives for goals rather than points. Like, you love those players because you just kind of, when they get the ball in their hand, you're nearly standing up off your seat because they have a reputation. And Pat McGrath was saying that John, his son, was used to watch games and he could never understand why a forward would take a handy point from 30 yards if there was even the slightest hint of a goal chance on. I just love that attitude.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the sweeper system has a part to play in it, right?
Yeah.
But as you say, when you need a goal and forward and teams need goals, they manage to get them an awful lot. And so there's a mentality there where you take an easy option throughout the game, but then, oh, we're 4 points down with a few minutes to go, let's go for a goal, and they get it. So it is there throughout the game.
Yeah.
But it's that mentality where, as you say, like, when you're a few points up, or just keep tapping on the scoreboard and keep scoring points, it's the easy option. But he took on two men there. So sweeper or no sweeper, he took on two men and got the goal.
Then David Burke, who was coming across. So three really. You know?
Yeah, so he's well capable, and other forwards are as well. And look, it makes the game an awful lot better to watch. And when I seen the stats of 2.7 goals a game and 2007 as well, I think it was
3.1. Yeah,
so
it's not a huge difference.
No. So you have games going on where you might get six goals, and then you might have two games where there's no goals. So that it evens out that way. And I find in the bigger games, the longer championship goes on, there's more goals available because the sweeper system doesn't win All Ireland, and it's shown that way. Like, the top teams in the last few years don't have sweepers. Derek McGrath took Waterford there, didn't manage to win it. He's probably been the closest with that system. So, like, the longer the championship goes on, the more goals are normally scored because it opens up and you have games in Croker, and that sweeper system doesn't work there. So, I'd love to see more goals. I love John McGrath. I think he's a phenomenal hurler, and you can see it in tip. They have that flick down on the half forward line where they. a forward breaks onto the ball or a midfielder breaks onto it, and they've worked on it. It's not something that just happens where they just flick the ball down on, and when they come onto the ball at pace, it's so hard to defend against, and that's what they're so good at.
Yeah,
and other teams are trying to catch up that and learn on that, you know. But
even look at the two teams in the All-Ireland final out, Cheddar, right? So you look at the Limerick full forward line. Mulcahy loves to tap over pints, not a goal scorer. Flanagan will do loads of work, he's not a goal scorer. And Galan, he'll go for a kick goal and probably kick it wide. Like, I mean, Galan can get the odd goal, but yeah. And even look at the Galway team then. Conor Whelan's more than happy to tap him over. Johnny Glynn, he might go for a goal if he gets it on the edge of the square, and whoever's the other corner, Cottle Mannion or Burke or whoever it is. Are we losing goal poachers? Now, I know that, like what Michael said, that the average in 2007 was 3.1 and now it's 2.84, so not a huge difference. No. But are the goal poachers kind of going out of the game?
I think it's difficult just to make a general comment on something like that, Willie. I mean, you take Shane O'Donnell. Shane O'Donnell is not noted for a pint scoring ability. He is certainly not a goal scoring ability, so he probably feels more comfortable to take on the player and go for goal than he does maybe at being like Patrick Horgan, you know, stepping off the player and popping it over the bar and that. I'd probably look at all of those decisions and I'd say, is the player in possession of the ball making good decisions? Because sometimes the pint wins the match. It's not necessarily just a mindset of going for goals, because let's say there was a draw match and Shane got that ball and decided to go for the goal, and there was a handy pint on to win the game, and he went for the goal just because it's perceived to be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So I'll go back to that point. It's good decisions on the ball is really, really important here. I will say that all of the great forwards have a ruthless mindset, generally speaking, whether it's Henry or whether it's DJ or going back to Kerr or going back to my favourite Jimmy Dial. They just had a ruthless mindset and good decision making on the ball. But I'll flip this around another way, Willie. It's always been said goals win matches. Well, I can tell you, stopping the concession of goals definitely wins matches. And I probably regard that as more important. And if you look at some of the stats, and I know Christy has these and would be able to present these, something like 95% of goals are scored within the big D, and something like 80% of them are scored within the small D. So it makes real sense to block up that space there. And that's what's been happening in the last couple of years. Backs drop back and cut off that space all of the time, and they nearly give the pint rather than concede the goal. And, you know, players are much more tactically aware now than they used to be a number of years ago, and they won't rush into that type of a tackle if they think that there's a chance of getting the goal. So I think in different types of teams, different formations, different systems, you may see more goals, but there's an awful lot more underlying factors to why there's more goals in some games and not in others that you'd need to explore before, you know, you just make a sort of a general comment on something that I would feel.
Yeah, okay, great. So I want to talk about refereeing here, lads, because there's a clip doing the rounds on Twitter, and it's the clip of Pádraic Mannion against Clare. Now, Fergal Horgan was the referee that day, and I don't care, Fergal Horgan didn't have a good game that day. I was watching that game going, even when he blew for a free, even it was a free, you're almost saying, geez, well, if that was a free, how come the other... You know, he let so much go to the point there where he blew a free that was a free, you're almost questioning the bloody free, which is a genuine free. And it's like, I mean, Pádraic Mannion in the clip, he's fouled five times minimum. So he's tripped to the ground once, fouled, pulled and dragged, and then tripped. So three times, then he falls on the ground, there's a ruck. Pádraic Mannion, incredible heart and attitude that he actually won the ball back in the ruck, broke free again, was pulled back again and tripped for a second time. He didn't get one free, fouled five times. Eventually, in desperation, because he was tripped up into the ground, hand passed it away to the Clare sweeper, goes down the other end. I think Clare won a free down the other end. Now, that's just outrageous, outrageously bad refereeing. Yeah. Like, I mean, how can any assessor stand over that and say, Fergal Horgan, you can't referee a game this week? Or else, how do you know what's a free and what's not a free?
Yeah, well, I watched that game back, Willie. I thought initially he was very harsh on Galway throughout that game. And when you watched it back then, see, top players are masters at their trade now, and that includes deceiving the referee. So backs are very good at fouling and getting away with it, and forwards are great at earning a free that wasn't a free. And when you take in particular, say, I have a few instances here, lads sprinting towards the ball, sprinting now, and then stopping dead at it and getting fouled.
Yeah.
You're not really going for the ball, because you can't do that in hurling. You can't sprint and stop and pick a ball, so you're not really going for a ball. And it's great, like, if you're in the full back line, you go out to the corner, you get to clear 80 yards with a free then, because they're doing it over and over again and getting away with it.
Yeah.
Another one was the initial contact. So when lads make initial contact, you get that split second to put your arms around the player, stop him, and then remove one arm, and you have him then.
Yeah.
And you either has to drop the ball and you can win it back, or pop it off, or over carry it. But the initial contact is a free. And when I was watching the Galway forwards, it's actually easier to defend against the Galway forwards, I know the size of them, than the Clare forwards, because of the height. When you have Dave Reedy, Colin Gavin, Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell, Podge in particular,
they're getting frees easier.
They duck all the time. Yeah. And like, they're not trying to go around you, they're ducking their head. You naturally have the hand on over, and it's a free straight away. Like, they're buying frees every single time.
Yeah.
Whereas the Galway lads are so big, they tend not to go around you and try to go through you. If you stand your ground, you can get away with barging, they'll, you fall back, or else you just hold them up initially with that tack. So lads are getting away with this all the time. And like, it's very hard to, when you watch Galway, say they're easier to defend against because of the size of them. But they are, because it's just stopping them with your body initially. And for refs, you couldn't pay me enough to be a ref, because lads are so good at these days. They're so small, the tackles. Like, it's easy for a pull to get sent off. They're the easy decisions. But lads are getting so good at fouling these days.
Yeah.
It's very hard to pick up on. And even with that spare hand, everyone does it and slaps the hurl and pulls the jersey. Once you're not holding on too long, and lads are getting so good at it, and they're working at this in training. And I can't blame them. I did it all my career. You need every edge on the pitch.
Yeah.
But when lads are picking up on these refs, it's just consistency, really. Because when you're being beaten, say, well in the match, I always find that refs are given the team that are beaten well a bit more leniency.
Yeah, well, that was my next point. It's reffing the scoreboard rather than reffing the game.
Absolutely.
And so you've got Galway 9 points up. You've got, they're all Ireland champions, Clare the underdogs. Mm. You're reffing the scoreboard at that stage, Cheddar, and you're trying to make a game of it. Like, I mean, are you actually, is human nature kicking in here then and going, Jesus, well, you'd be no harm from a spectacle point of view if they've got. Like, I'm trying to explain how Mannion wouldn't get a free there, you know, when Galway are well on top.
I don't agree with that, Willie.
No.
I think the Mannion case, first of all, is an exceptional case. I think there was about 6 fouls actually in that case. So clearly it was a free. Like, there's no argument about that. Incidentally, I'm really interested to hear Michael talk from a defender's viewpoint here in the last couple of minutes. Look, I think that's an exceptional case, so I'm not going to really talk about that. But I want to talk in general. All hurling people want the game to flow.
Yeah.
And yet we want the game to be reffed by the rules. Now, there's a contradiction there. And, you know, we need to sort that out first of all. If we want the game to flow, we're going to have to let some sort of half foul or something like that go. Now, I'm clearly not talking about the Park Mannion case, because, as I said, it was exceptional. There's about 5 or 6 fouls in, and some of them, as Michael has explained, technical fouls where his ball hand was being held back and so on and so on. So I think we need to decide on what that is, because if you're going to referee by the rules, you're going to have a huge amount of frees in the game. It'd be stop start the whole way through, and I can guarantee a referee will be slated for it.
Nobody wants that.
No. Nobody wants that. But on the other side of that, let the game flow. If you let the game flow and you go back and look at video analysis of those games, and I've looked at hundreds of them over my career, you will find that I should have got, or my team should have got some frees, but equally you will find that the other team should have got some frees, and generally speaking it balances out. Now, there will be some critical cases when a free is a critical game changer or something like that, and we're just going to have to take this on the chin. There's nothing is perfect here. These are human beings doing the best they can, and I'm very sure, particularly at the intercounty level and particularly at that level, that referees don't go out to even things up or balancing up. They referee what they see. One thing I will say, there's two points I'll make on that, Willie. Where the referee comes from is often very important, because if the hurling style in that county is very competitive and robust type of hurling, and the refereeing is generally speaking the same, whereas in another county it could be very, very clean, nice tippy-tappy hurling, and the refereeing reflects that. And I think that's the one point, and I'm really hitting at the inconsistencies here. And the other point I will make is that the refereeing at the top level is very, very different at the Joe McDonnell level, where referees are starting out, where there's people overseeing them and they're really, really refereeing by the rules. So if you wanted an example of inconsistency of application of how a referee should referee a game, go look at the Munster finals or Leinster finals or something like that, and go look at a Joe McDonagh game or maybe a Christy Ring game, where younger referees are reffing strictly by the rules, and it's a very, very different way of refereeing.
Right.
But I'll go back to my original point. We need to decide, what do we want? We cannot be in the terrace or in the Klein and end below on Turles and be shouting, let the game flow, referee, and then when he blows for a couple of frees,
you're lynching him.
Then we're lynching him. So, you know, we cannot do that. I do think that I said it the last day. It was interesting we were speaking about this maybe in the last couple of weeks, Willie, that I think there's probably not enough experienced referees around at the minute. That, you know, we've lost Barry, we've lost a number of referees over the last couple of years that were experienced. And
I was going to say James McGrath here. Me and Michael are smiling at each other. I'll say it.
Look, on a serious note, lads, I know I said this earlier. I feel for James McGrath. I think he was ill-advised to go the route he went. But I feel for him. He's given an awful lot to the game, and I think he should just reconsider it. And, you know, it might be knee-jerk reaction. But look, we'll all get setbacks. Everybody gets setbacks. The managers, the players, the linesmen, everybody gets setbacks. Yeah. Umpires get more setbacks this year than anybody. And I said to James, look, he's served the organisation. Well, rethink his approach here and go back and start refereeing again.
I wouldn't miss Barry though. I remember you'd be on the pitch and he'd be telling you, shut the hell up. He'd speak to you like that, right. You know, it was a bit of a shocker. So I remember, I'll always remember the games he was playing, he was just like, shut up, Carton.
Barry Kelly.
Yeah.
I have to say, I had great regard for him. I was even before the matches. I like referees that respect you as a player or as a manager, and when they do that, they get it back in loads. And I like that. I have to compliment Barry. He'd always come over before the match, and he might say, "Look, these are the things I'm looking for today." And I'm presuming he's saying the same thing to the opposition manager. And look, it's up to you then to interpret that and get your team properly prepared for that. But the referees that just disregard you and just don't respect you as a player or as a manager, I'd less
players hate them.
I think absolutely.
And the egos of them, and I don't know if either of you played soccer, but like the arrogant egos of soccer referees, they talk to you like they're the principal of a school and you're a student, and it's like, oh Jesus, it makes my blood boil. It's like they won't accept anything. But the referees I always respected were referees who might even explain why it was a free tee if you complain. Well, you know as well as I do that was and that's just talking to you as a human being and being just sound about the decision. There's other
just a final point on that, Willie. As managers, you actually look at the referee that you're getting for the game, and you assess the way your referee is. Look, you're going to notice anyway, because Fergal Horgan's a top class referee. You're probably going to encounter him a lot during the league. You'll have a fair sense for exactly for what he pulls and what he doesn't, and you need to know that. You need to go back and get your video analysis person and get all of the statistics on the referee. You know, what does this referee do? And that's the level of detail you go to. If the referees are inconsistent, well then that makes it much more important to do that. So I think if there's a level of consistency, and particularly either decide, let the game flow to start with. If it's getting out of hand, then let's referee by the rules. I think there needs to be some sort of protocols. We don't need any more rules, just some protocols around that everybody understands, managers, players, supporters, and I don't think we'd be okay.
But that's the problem. And Colin Ryan replied back to me yesterday because I was tweeting about this Mannion thing, and he says there's a completely different set of rules from inter-county to club and county to county. It's beyond frustrating. There's a huge difference. That's what your point on the Christie Ring and the Joe McDonough. Yeah. And he's saying not even from that, from level to level, from inter-county to club, from level to level, and then from county to county. So, I suppose on Cheddar's point, in football it's the same thing. You know what referees are finicky about, and you study them and you're told, don't do this with this fella, or alternatively, you can do this with this fella. Especially in hurling. But those referees have to be consistent with what they're letting away. I don't know much about Fergal Horgan, but if Fergal Horgan letting that away in that game, and then he's a bit more finicky in the next one, then you don't know where you're coming coming or going.
Absolutely, we over the years we've had referees come into our camp, have a discussion over new rules and what's going on, and it's what they're particularly going to pull. Certain years are told to pull up certain rules, be more vigilant on them, and I think it's a good thing for every team to do to call a ref in. But the only problem is, the next game you play then, the same ref wouldn't pull you up on them. That's the problem. I seen Colin Ryan wanted two refs.
He's
a brilliant free taker and he's a forward, so that way. No wonder he'd be gone.
You want one ref for the other 28, and then you want one watching Michael Carton
let's just consider that for a minute. Let's say one referee decides the referee by the rules and you decide to let the game flow. You'd have mayhem.
You'd have inconsistency between the two bloody referees.
I think that's the solution.
Just finish up, lads, on James McGrath quickly, because I don't know who's worse here, whether it's James McGrath going on the 6 o'clock news to say that he's stepping down as a referee when it's a completely childish attitude, and I'm talking from experience. This is a I'm a fellow who've dropped off leash panels like a baby, and like, you know, you're being petulant and you know what you're doing is wrong. It's just, this is just a gut reaction that you're just, you are acting immature. Now, when I've done it, I'd never answered a phone call to a journalist or actually explained why I'm doing it, because I'm kind of embarrassed about what I'm doing, but I still have to do it for myself. But this fella, to go on the 6 o'clock news, so to go on the 6 o'clock news, like, anyone gives a monkey's whether this fella is refereeing or not. For me, it gives you an insight into where these referees' heads are at, that he might think this is national news. And don't know where Marty Morrissey, his head is at, thinking that this is a 6 o'clock, 6-1 news leading story, that he's sending a camera man down to interview this referee who's throwing his ties out of the pram, and it's not national news. It's just not. It's a story that should be ignored. And I'd imagine James McGrath will kind of cop himself on in a few weeks and he'll be back refereeing, because, like, I mean, this is not, it's just a childish, immature reaction, and how it's gotten the airtime it has, I just can't comprehend.
Yeah, it's a nothing story, Willie. Look, it's a slow news day, nothing happening. They decide this is going to be the big news of the day, and look, we've all thrown our toys out of pram at one stage or another, but unfortunately we didn't do it in front of the whole the national press, you know. As you say, I'd say he regrets it now, and I'd love to see him back. He's a good ref, but look, no one comes out looking good out of this whole
What's
thing.
He like on the field? I don't know much about him. Is he, has he a bit of an ego on the field?
Or no,
is he
one of these quite fair. I've always found him quite fair.
So it's an unusual reaction from him then?
Yeah, look, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Was he promised this game months ago? Or, you know, like,
We
honestly don't know what's going on. Like, so I'd say that's what happened. Someone said that he's going to have that game. He didn't have either semi-final, so he obviously had it on his radar then.
That this was
going to come up, and it didn't, so... He had an knee-jerk reaction. It was just a bad one.
And I think that's a good point, actually, Michael, that I hadn't thought about. There is sort of some protocols in the past that the top referees who don't get the semi-finals do get the All-Ireland. You know, and maybe the communications to Jim McGrath might have been an awful lot better. So, in other words, he knew a week or a fortnight ago that he didn't get this, rather than that at the announcement stage of it.
And James Owens refereed the first Galway Clare game, so correct. He refed the semi, so maybe he was thinking.
You know, so there is precedent here for him. And I think, you know, in fairness to James McGrath, I think that would have been helpful with good communications here. Now, maybe that happened, we don't know. But I do agree.
And we're not going to interview him to ask him.
I'll be on a serious note. Like, you know, it's a very, very difficult job, and a job that none of us around the table here would be willing to take up. So, you know, my hats are off to James McGrath here. I do think he'll regret this. You know, I think his choice of making this public was wrong. And certainly I'd love to see him back refereeing again.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. We'll be back with John Conlon.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
Let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
No, absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, delighted to say John Conlon has joined us on the line now. John, how's the body? It's Thursday after two grueling games for 2 weeks in a row. Are you back to normal again?
We're fairly devastated, like, after losing, but it was disappointing to end in such a, I suppose, a low. But I suppose it was a very encouraging year, and we had to move on, and we've club champion now in 2 weeks, so. Just get back at it really.
How are you forgetting over losses like that? Like, I mean, does it take you a few weeks, or are you able to kind of park it and move on pretty quickly?
Yeah, look, I suppose when I was younger I would have taken a lot harder. I suppose this one now this year was really hard to take, as well, that we had our chances, and it was a difficult week. Like, I live in Clonard, which is on the border of the Limerick border. We overlook Limerick, you know, and we can see the city lights, and just seeing the kind of, I suppose, the, you know, the anticipation towards an All Ireland and John going on at the moment, and you know, the excitement around Limerick. It's a pity that, I suppose, we're not there ourselves to kind of experience that and enjoy that experience. That, you know, it's such a magical day out, and we're very disappointed that we haven't made that breakthrough to the All Ireland again. But look, we'll have to get over it and get back on the horse, as they say.
Yeah, you mentioned you threw it away, and it was a good year all around. Like, I'm wondering, we were talking on the podcast about how Clare are going to kind of look back at the season. Will it be with regret that you had the chances both days to beat Galway, or will you look at the bigger picture and go, look how far we've come in comparison to other years?
Yeah, look, at the start here, we would have said we had dreams of winning Munster then All-Irelands, and I suppose we kind of said to each other, like, I suppose those dreams would have been kind of, I suppose, with a bit of doubt in the background as well, knowing that we'd had been there before, but if you look back at it, there's only about, I think I was looking at a picture there recently, and there's only about 15 of that panel left around now, so there has been a lot of changes, and obviously with different managers and management now, and I suppose there was a bit of doubt there to start here, where did we stand, like, we made massive progress this year, you know, as a group, you know, we came a lot closer together, and you know, and just with the manager, we found a great balance between with them as well, and you know, I think as a group we can be very happy with our year, you know, that we was very successful on the field and off the field, that, you know, we learned a lot about each other and evolved our style of play, and then really, you know, like had fun, I suppose, if you want to kind of say, and I just don't think, look, obviously we were only a puck of a ball away being in All-Ireland, but I suppose on one side you can look that we made a lot of strides towards reaching that goal of winning Munsters in All-Ireland, and you know, we can look forward to get back on the playing field, and you know, we're only looking forward to getting back training again and, you know, in another few months' time.
Yeah, I saw you were quoted as saying we're trying to build character this year within the group, build leaders, and I think the management has had a really big focus on that this year, that it's more player driven, and I know your management team have said during the year that players kind of drive, no, don't dictate, but give a lot of feedback into what tactics you might use and what might suit you as players. Do you think that that's kind of all led into the improved performance?
Oh, massively, yeah. Look, I think, you know, when they first came in, they've learned a lot as a management team as well, and like at the start of the year, they would have got us to go away and self-reflect and see where we are as players. And I know myself, I was kind of in a, I suppose I was 10 years on the panel now, and I was kind of in a weirdo, you know, situation, and you know, a lot of the older, we'll say, the brigade had kind of left last year, and a lot of my friends that I would have been great friends with, you know, like the Brendan Bugglers and Colin Ryans and Paddy Donnans, you know, and so, you know, it was kind of a new time for me, and I suppose at the start of the year I really felt that I needed to stand up and become a big leader in the dressing room, and I think a lot of lads kind of found that too, that, you know, we had to take over the I suppose that mantle, if you want to kind of say, and they put, so we started back in Boston back in November, and their first thing was that we had to organise the whole trip, you know, with their guidance, and you know, between getting lads passports, bags ready, you know, and everything ready for the trip, and a liaison, the GPA and the GA, and that was a big trip for us as a group, because it really got us together and really got a great bond going, and as the year went on, you know, like players' meetings, like, you know, regarding matches and stuff, would be led by with their questions, and we'd have to facilitate, and at the start of the year, you know, you'd have the same lads probably saying the same, you know, like in any team, you'd really have the leader just kind of saying words here and there. By the end of the year, 1 to 30 were talking, and you know, if someone hadn't given a pass, or if there was something proper, you know, done well in the field, it was addressed in those meetings, and lads were very open, which kind of, I suppose, before we were maybe beating around the bush, where now, you know, lads are open to take those things, and as a group, I think that really brought us on, and that was due to the management being very open about, you know, how we were playing as players, and how maybe their management, you know, was going, like, and they'd always ask us for feedback and in terms of training and drills, and how, you know, the setup was, and can they improve in any way, which is, you know, great to them, because that means that they would have to, you know, they're willing to take criticism at times, and know, that's the characters that they are. And in fairness to Donal and Jerry, they built a fantastic management team up around them for the last 2 years. And I'd be delighted and love if they get a new term. And you know, we're looking forward to, and hopefully that they'll be back next year with us.
Yeah, hopefully they will. I'm sure they will as well. I wouldn't see any reason why they wouldn't. But just even the psychology of players driving these things. Obviously, the psychology of that is that if players take ownership of it and that's what they want, they'll obviously want it to work, and they might, you know, try that bit harder, that it's your ideas and that it's what you want, so now go out and do it. But I'm just wondering, is this in a contrast to maybe Davy Fitz, who obviously is a brilliant manager, but I wouldn't think Davy would kind of be open to what players think, or maybe he has his own strong ideas. Is that fair for me looking from the outside?
Yeah, well, look, like when we won it in 2013, I just think everything, you know, took off and had a life of its own. And like, you know, that season, you know, we had tactics, but they kind of, like, as I have, they once got the program, things go out the window, and we just really expressed ourselves and enjoyed it so much. And I would have found that, you know, like, Davy did massive things for us as a group. Like when I started, you know, I remember before Davy came in, we had a massive hammering above in Galway, and I don't know, to be by plus more than 20 points. Like, and, you know, I remember those bad days, and I suppose a lot of wouldn't have remembered those in 2013 when they came on the scene. And and then we went through a few hard years the last few years, and John, you know, to kind of reflect a lot, and you know, I can't put a finger on it why we didn't, wasn't one for trying or trying to be the best, or wasn't one, you know, it wasn't that the setup wasn't, you know, fully right, like everything was there for us to perform. And you can see the reaction Davy is, you know, he got it with us with Clare, and he's got it with Wexford as well, John. They seem to have massive value on him, and like, he came in and changed things upside down completely in terms of professionalism and how we performed on the field and really pushed the boundaries out. So look, like, obviously the lads bought into that, then the new management, and just kind of brought it on to another level. And but like, you're going to have contrasting management and contrasting styles and contrasting opinions. So John, they'd be, the new management would be very much player, John, business driven, and they, you know, they're very successful businessmen, and would kind of bring that kind of we'll say into the team ethos in terms of meetings and how we have to kind of express ourselves and delegate out jobs to us and get, you know, get us to work with them in conjunction to make the team successful.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, talk to us about your move to full forward, because you're predominantly obviously a wing forward, and I've made that move myself, and the dynamic of running on the wing and running towards the goal and having that momentum, just flicking the ball over the bar, in comparison to winning the ball with your back to goal and having to kind of shoot on the turn, it's a completely different skill set. But you made it look kind of effortless, the transition this year.
Yeah, look, I would have always loved playing full forward. I suppose my best hurler for club and county, I would see in my own eyes, would have been in the full forward. And I suppose, but then when I started out with Clare, I would have been in the half forward and starting. And I suppose you get a name for playing wing forward. And same with the club, if ball isn't coming in, you're coming out straight away to try and win a puck out, or, you know, because that would have been probably seen as I'd be good in the air. And then, but then this year, look, I was lucky enough that I got that chance to get into the full forward line, and look, I loved it. It was a really fantastic experience for me, and really enjoyable. And, you know, it's a different mindset. It is, like, you know, that I would have seen myself, when you're wing forward, and the new modern wing forward kind of half forward line is up and down the field, and especially when you're on the wing, sometimes you mightn't touch the ball for 10, you know, 10 minutes, and you're trying to be that outlet kind of down the wing where modern game has gone. And when you're in full forward, you're kind of in centre forward, you're in the hustle, the bustle of action the whole time. You can get to both wings, you can help out, and you always seem to be around the ball. And that was one thing I said to manager at the start here, that I'd love to play more centrally, that I'd find that it would benefit my game. And they took it on board, and I was delighted that I could the team in any way possible, and you know, if it means being full forward, corner forward, or on the bench, I'll give my all to Clare Hurling.
Yeah, it could be frustrating, obviously, in full forward, because looking at the Cork game, I was down at the Munster final, and Jesus, the ball you got in that first half was great. You were breaking out to the wing, the same wing all the time, and sticking them over, and then it dried up in the second half. Then against Galway and Croke Park, you didn't get much ball in the first half. Second half, you got that lovely ball out under the Cusack again, which you feed off, and then the Galway second game, just for the first half, the ball coming in was terrible, you know, like, I mean, you were isolated on two men. Like, is there a bit of an inconsistency on the ball that's coming in, or is it the opposition gets credit for kind of figuring that out?
I think opposition had to get credit for figuring out against Cork, as well, they would have seen the space, and then in the second half, Christopher Joyce seemed to sit back and cover that, you know, those areas, but that was up to us then, nearly, to adapt to that, you know, that we need to play the ball a bit shorter and through the lines. And yeah, it can be frustrating at times, but I suppose the big thing I tried to work on this year was you know, the mental side of the game, and I suppose I wouldn't have had used it too much before, but we got a great guy involved this year with it. I was in the backroom team, Michael O'Reilly, and he brought a lot to our group in terms of, you know, the mental aspect of the game. And a big thing I would have said during matches, like, is you know, things I kind of wrote out during the week, and just then eventually, like, I'd always say, win the moment, or whenever that extra, that second that I take a second, if the ball wasn't coming in for a while or things weren't going right, I would say, well, you get your chance. So I think when you're in the full forward line, you kind of have to, you don't get a lot of ball, but when you get the ball, you have to utilise it and use it well. And I think that was my motto this year as a player. When you get it, you have that split second, and you have to make the right decision and be confident. And look, it seemed to work. So must be something that I must try and adapt into my game for the future as well going forward.
Yeah, so you'd be writing out things during the week. Would this sports psychologist would tell you maybe to write your thoughts down during the week, or would that be the week after what you did right and wrong, or would it be before a game?
To do it daily, it was kind of a sequence. I just write different things about the big thing they asked us this year was to realise why we play for Clare, and why we do this, why we give up so much time. And those are the thing that maybe players maybe don't think about enough, you know. Yeah. Why do we play the sport, you know? They spent a lot of time at the start of your kind of us just kind of really dissecting it and understanding why we do it, and just those little things I used to put down every few days, and my goals for the year, and then just in terms of different games, who you're coming up against, how you might try and beat them by analysing them and looking at video footage, and just getting to, so I just think it was just easier that you just felt clear and you felt really relaxed going into the game. And you know, one of the things, the last thing I'd usually say is just, you know, have a smile on your face, because I suppose, like, you know, you just need to really go out and enjoy it, because look, you put in so much time. I think when I was younger, I think I'd nearly get anxious and get nervous leading up to games, where the last 2 years I've found that balance, I suppose, with life, and you know, I'm very happy and in a great relationship with my girlfriend Michelle, and you know, I'm building a house, and you know, a primary school teacher, and also I'm doing a strength and conditioning course with Santa College, and all those little things just help, just yeah, make you feel relaxed and balanced. And I think as you get older, I think you kind of enjoy it a bit more, because you know there's many years left. Like, so I think I found that balance this year, and I just used to write those down, little points down, and they used to just make me feel relaxed and happy going into the games. And it was as if I was going out to the local field, just playing a challenge match for the local club. Like, so
yeah, that's it. That's interesting. Yeah, the psychology of it. So what was your answer when you were asked why you play for Clare?
The main thing I play for McClare is my family. Look at my mother would have been the nurse of the local J club here, and my father would have been over all my underage teams, and just to make them proud, really, because they are proud when I go to represent Clare. You know, my father would be kind of a really, you know, kind of a I suppose he wouldn't give much praise away too often, but you know, when he says he's proud of you after Clare matches and after club matches, that means a lot, like, you know,
yeah.
from someone that has been there up along throughout my career and really been a massive support, my both parents, and just to see the happiness in their faces when you win and when you lose, they always say, "Look, we're still proud of you." So, you know, they're the driving forces, and my girlfriend and her family, and then just the main thing is the jersey, I suppose. Look, we don't really emphasise how much it means, I suppose, to play hurling and you know, you obviously go through a lot of bad days, but you know, you see there when you beat Tipperary this year in Thurles, the euphoria and the enjoyment that people got out of that, and I know we didn't come away with a trophy this year, but you know, when Shane O'Donnell scored that goal the last day, just want to roar that, you know, they're things that will live with you for a long time, and you know, playing at Limerick and Ennis, you know, we train there most nights and we play club matches there, but you never usually see it's full with 19,000 people above, and as we call it, the shed, and they start hitting the shed when you start scoring, and you know, just the feel that experience is a massive, it's a massive massive thrill, and look, I know myself, like, you know, I probably only have a few more years left at it, and every time you get that thrill, it's very hard to emulate.
Yeah, no, if they come in, I have to say your description of why you play would be very similar to mine. My father never told me he was proud of me. He wouldn't be his style. I'd know he'd be delighted if I played well, but he would never say it to me. But still, you just know that your parents are in great form. Like, I mean, a lot of it is for them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I remember we won the All Ireland Under 21 against Kilkenny back in 2009, and you know, like, you go out after it, and I remember my father collecting me at 6 o'clock in the morning up in Croisín. I don't know how we ended up back there, but Kieran O'Doherty was our captain at the time, and we were back in Croisín, and he collected me, and he was bringing us home in the van. You know, he's a plumber, and he just goes to everyone had left the van, and sure, everyone was probably worse for wear. And I was half asleep, and he just tapped me on the shoulder, and he went, "Well done." that "well done" meant loads to me. Like, even the first day we played Galway this year, he'd never usually say much, but he rang me the morning of the game. I hadn't seen him. I think they were at a wedding the night before, and he hadn't seen him the day before. You know, so he just rang that morning, and it was funny. Like, I had a big smile on my face, and I was like, "What's wrong?" I was like, "Oh, he just said." I'll play every ball with you. You know, simple like that.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be used to hearing it, like, and it just meant a lot, like, kind of, you know. But it's just funny, those little things, and like, I know my mother, like, you know, she's been through hard times. She had cancer twice, you know, and just to see the drive that she'd have to get out of those little scenarios and little problems, you know, meant a lot to me, and that really drives me to be the best I can be, and that's what they've always said, to be as good as you can be, and look, you'll have your ups and downs in life, and you just have to drive on with it. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. Come here, before we finish up, we talked about you on the show here about 3 weeks ago. It was the interview you did with Dermot Crowe, and you were talking about blending all your food, and I was like, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
John Connell will probably get an All-Star this year, but I don't know if it was an All-Star worth blending your food for a whole year.
The amount of people that have asked me about that now since. No, actually, all I do is really, we got a nutritionist in this year, Agronia Travers, and we've never really had a nutritionist on board, and
I found that sorry to cut you off there. I found that interesting that you didn't have a nutritionist in before, because I saw that interview and you said it was on the player's request. Is that not something that inter-county squads would have had?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose we never had it before. With Davey, we had a very good strength and nutrition guy on board, Joe O'Connor, and at the moment we've Calvin Harrell, and they're very knowledgeable and excellent at that kind of side of things, and they used to give us a lot of advice and guidance, but I just find that she came in and kind of, that was her sole objective, you know, just to kind of get us all on board, and you know, your lads come to games just with baking done now this year and different little treats kind of to keep themselves ticking over, and I know myself, I would have always thought that I had a great diet, and she said she said I was getting a, I had an A-class diet, but I was only getting a C-class grade for a jaundice when I was going out playing and stuff, that maybe I wasn't, I wasn't digesting my food properly, and she went off and got me to do a test. You know, she said that, you know, some people, like, are obviously students, or some people are, have terrible diets coming in, and then some people would be up the top and think that they would be, have great diets, and she said that my diet was great, but how could I bring it to the next level? I asked her, so she got me to do a test, and it just came back that I was drawing low on different minerals and vitamins, and then that I wasn't breaking down my proteins kind of properly, and how, you know, she kind of pointed that towards a digestive problem, so she put on different kind of supplements, and kefir and apple cider vinegar, and then to get me off kind of red meat and eat more fish and chicken and turkey, and but, I don't know, it seemed to help. I seemed to have a lot more energy, and I felt a lot better on the field, and in terms of the blending, I just kind of started to do that just on the day of a match. It wouldn't be on a regular basis, thank God. But, there was loads of people asking about that, like, oh, is that a thing that you do the whole time? And I don't know, she rang me that week, says, I hope you don't do that, like, so she said, make sure if anyone ever asks you, just to clarify that. So I was glad now that I can clarify that I'm not a weirdo and I'm going around blending my food constantly. So
yeah, because I was like, what's the point in being alive if you have to blend all your food every single day?
Yeah. I actually heard that podcast. It was actually funny, so I was laughing at it about it one day. So,
well, now you can clear it up. You can clear it up now.
Yeah, just clear it up.
Come here, have you been eating steak all week then, since the Galway game?
Actually, after the match, we got off the bus in LIT in Limerick, and the girlfriend was in eating food in Limerick with her family, and I went straight in, and they said, would you want to join us? I said, I will. I went in straight in and ordered a big big massive sterling steak, so I was delighted eating that. I'll be eating loads of red meat now for the next week or so before we hit it back with the club then again.
Get back into the club. Come here, two more things before I let you go. You've been great with your time. Is what's it like marking Dottie Burke? Like, it was a titanic battle between the two of you, and even like it was like the theatre of it, even the second day in Thurles, the two of you stuck your chest together as in, you know, two stags going at it. Like, would there be verbals between the two of you? Like, it looked like a very clean contest between the two of you.
Yeah, you know, to answer honestly, Dottie is a super hurler. And you just kind of think differently when you're playing against a left-handed hurler as well, because it's not like you're common. You know, most players play with their right hand on top, and that's what I've used to. And then I suppose I did adapt my game to little things like. But he is a classical player, and he's a massive player for Galway. And look, it was a great battle for the 2 days, and I suppose he was one of the hardest competitors I've come up against, but he was just clean and really just aggressive and on the ball, and I really enjoyed it for the 2 days, and we had our own ups and downs, I suppose, and we beat each other at one stage, and he'd catch a ball over my head, so it was enjoyable, and I really relished it, and I suppose he did. I hope he did too, wish him best for the final. He's a great player, and is probably I suppose, as you kind of say, an old style fullback kind of that, you know, minds his kitchen and doesn't dishes out enough to kind of keep everyone away and keep everyone up. he's been a rock for Galway, in fairness, so and long may it continue for him, and I wish him the best of luck in the final.
Just finally, before I let you go, is I know you're very honest here in this interview, and like, I was looking up, you haven't got an All-Star yet in your career, and you're 29, and like, for me, you're a shoe-in for one this year. Is this something that's in your head now? I know it's a team game and all those answers are correct during the year, but would it be crossing your mind around now, have I done enough for one, or would are kind of personal awards like that important to you?
I suppose, like, look, every year you go out, you like, when I'm putting down my goals at the start of the year, it's to win everything that's done offer this year, and when I put down my goals this year, that would be one of the things, and to win every game, we'll say, or win my Munster All Ireland and win a Cannon Hamilton with my club, like, You know, they're massive goals for me, and then I suppose down at the end of the goals would be to obviously, person. Accolade is also a nice thing, and that would be one of the accolades, winning an All-Star and putting down, it really wouldn't have to, it would drive you, and it's not a thing that you put down every day, but I suppose it is a nice thing to win, and I suppose what player wouldn't like to win it, but because there's still a massive game to be played in 2 weeks' time, and a lot of things can change, and look, I'd be delighted if I won one, but it's only an award at the end of the day. It's not the be all and end all. It's all about winning the medals, and they're the things you look back and at the end, and you finish up. And I currently don't even, my All Ireland medal is down, and when we won in 2013, is down in my home house hidden somewhere. So I haven't seen that in years. So, someone said before, winning awards and winning medals, you can look back at the end of your career with fondness, and because when you finish up, but while you're playing, you're just focusing on the next game, trying to be the best you can be, and trying to succeed and try and win as much as possible. And it's just about the memories and really playing with the players that you've played, and building friendships. And look, where would we be without sport and about hurling, without hurling? It's a fantastic organisation, and long may it continue.
Yeah, exactly. If I know you in any way after the last 20 minutes, that All Ireland medal was handed to your mother the night to take care of, and you haven't seen it since.
Is that a funny story? I gave it to my mother, then it was up in the mantelpiece, and then a house got broken into back in 2014, and since then my father has just taken it and hidden it somewhere, and I haven't seen it since. So he said, you can have that when when you're old and you're finished. It's funny little stories, just should have.
Yeah, classic, right?
Well,
come here, listen. I know you've mentioned there that you're building a house. You're actually building a house as we speak. You're in the garage there. We haven't heard any drills or hammers or anything in the background, so I'll let you back to it. John, thanks very much for giving us your time.
No matter. Thanks, Colin. Thanks very much.
After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
I didn't but I was only a special guest. That Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. I was asked yesterday in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad jokes on our show here?
That's three.
No, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
Move away from the messing there, lads, right? We have a serious show to do here, right?
Okay, lads, questions from Twitter. So we'll get the first one rolling here. This is from Andrew Horan. He's asking the two of you, do Galway tend to tire as the game goes on? Is fitness a question? They've made a great start to all games this year, only to be reeled in.
Yeah, fitness I don't think is a question, really, because they look like unbelievable athletes. I've played against most of them, and their fitness levels are so high. Look, they've played two replays this year. It's a big ask. Kenny as well was so physical in that Leinster final. It's going to take it early, both physically and mentally. And it's been such a tough championship for all the weeks, the games rolling in together. And it's new for all the players. So it is going to take its toll on their legs. But look, they commit with two wins, after two replays. So they still have it in them. They are dying down. And it's hard to tell if it's fitness or if it's a bit of complacency. We're winning by 8 or 9 points. Take the foot off the gas. And then teams start tracking back, so it's hard to tell what it is.
I don't think
it's going to take much of a toll in the final. They've been so good up to now, and they've got through it, and now this break is going to
2 weeks off.
Huge for them. So
all the talk this year is that their strength and condition fella is the best in the country. I'm not going to try and pronounce his name, but he's the fella that came from Tipperary, and he's outstanding. Here's another question, Cheddar, and it might just kind of leads into this maybe on the same topic. Galway only made one. This is from Colm Keaveney. Galway only made one forced change to the 2017 team, which is Skehill. Do the lads think that the lack of fresh faces could be the reason why they've not thrived like 2017? Defending champions need minor alterations to keep the team guessing. Tip didn't last year, and that cost them. Galway much the same for 3 or 4 years now.
Look, I think in an ideal situation it would be good, particularly to be able to bring on a young player every year. I think, you know, Kilkenny did it a couple of years, not every year, a couple of years. Certainly Walter Welsh was an example. So, look, it is good and would be the ideal if you're able to do that. Obviously, the player would need to be very, very good in that as well. But the other side of that is, if the 15 or 20 players, like at the end of the day, the first team now is 20 players, if they are really motivating one another and driving one another on, and that, you know, the training and the training and the internal games reflect that, at the end of the day, you've got to put your best team on the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, Michael and Franny and Noel are looking at the team every night. We're not. And they're making the decisions on what they're seeing in front of them. Look, if the current 15 or the current 20 are the people that are, you know, excelling in training and in internal games, well, look, they're the people to start. Just having an ideal that you would like to bring in a younger player, preferably, or change your team up or something like that, you know, look, that wouldn't serve you well.
Well, now, sorry to cut you off. What do you put down this fading out of games? Because this is Kilkenny and Clare twice that they've built up big leads and pinned back. Some mentality thing. If it's not fitness, it's not personnel. How, like, this is three games in a row now. So this is switching off. This is a problem for Galway. Then is it becoming a problem?
In some of those games, maybe so. And you know, go back to what Michael says. You know, subconsciously you might just think you've the game won. And look, drop your guard now by 2%. And your motivational levels and your intensity by 2% now in serious hurling games, and you will concede a lot of scores very, very quickly. But some of those games were unhinged by the tactics that the opposition did, particularly with Clare bringing back a sweeper and that, you know, so they had a little bit more to do than that. But in all of the games, Galway came out strong at the end of it. So it's, no, it certainly wasn't fitness, because if it was fatigue, you would just get more fatigued as the game went on. So the science of this certainly doesn't say it's fatigue or anything like that. It may very well be what the other team is doing. And look, in the course of games, you will never be on the front foot right throughout every game. And all of these teams are very, very equal to one another. So there's going to be some parts of the game where the opposition is going to have momentum. And, you know, you're going to get a chance to go again. Of course, the real trick is to make hay while you have momentum. So I'm not sort of surprised to see this. And I don't think, look, if you were to look back at Galway's championship last year, particularly against the serious teams, and particularly against the likes of Tipperary in the All-Ireland semi-final in 2017, it was not very dissimilar this year. And it's actually a good trait of a team to be able to dig in there dig out the win. And that's what Galway have done. And they've done it a couple of times now. And you know, I actually think that's a good trait. It's certainly not anything to do with physiology or anything like that.
Okay. Right, so there's two Galway ones. We have two Limerick ones here now. So the questions based on teams are the two teams that are left in it, obviously. There's nobody too concerned. This is from Derek O'Donnell. With the weight of history, do the boys think Limerick are better chasing a lead in the final or trying to protect the lead? How important is McInerney to Galway in the final? I wouldn't worry about that part. But what about that Limerick thing mentally? Like, I mean, are they better chasing a lead or defending one?
I don't think it's anything about chasing or defending, Willie, to be honest with you.
Keeping a lead.
I don't think John Kiley will be looking at it like that.
It'll be
like,
nip tuck, he'll probably be saying.
Well, he won't even be looking. I don't think he'll be talking about those type of things. He'll be looking at his own game plan. Look, there'll be lots of aspects about that, about his defensive screen, his puck out strategy, his distribution strategy, and all of those things. And he'll be trying to implement all aspects of that really, really well throughout the game. But he probably will be taking the game in chunks. You just take the first 10 minutes, the next 10 minutes, and so you might have 3 10 minute spells, and the players will know this. We're managing this game in chunks as we go through it. I don't think the weight of history or anything like that has anything to do with it, to be honest with you. This is a new team. They actually have their own history by winning All-Ireland Under-21s and beating big teams in it. They've made their own history this year by beating some serious teams. You know, so what happened in 1973 and from there on has nothing to do with this team. And I'm sure that I think Carolyn Currid is involved with Limerick at the minute. You know, that's what will be said here. What history is what it is. It's history. Nothing to do with you. You didn't contribute to it, nor can you change it. But you can change what's going to happen in the next 60 minutes or the next 70 minutes here. And I think that's how they'll approach it. I think just on the timing of it, you'd be breaking the game down into small chunks and looking at your performance and how you'll work your way through that. They'll be also looking at other things, looking at the you know, substitutions and your substitutions plan and all of those things to change the course of the game. So you're looking at, and I hate using this word because it's thrown around so much now, you're looking at your own processes during the game rather than looking at historical things or anything like that, because you cannot change those.
Okay. great stuff. Is ground hurling dead? That's from Dave Bulger. I could probably answer that yes.
Yeah, it is. Like as you said, if I was a manager and I seen someone hitting the ball without looking up on the ground 30 yards, it's such an easy ball to win, like, you know. And managers will be telling most people, pick up a ball when you can. Look, there's times you hit ground hurling woolly, but it's more on a tackle.
Yeah.
And then you've no control over where the ball goes. That's the problem. So
was it Burns in the semi-final, Limerick and Cork, who, geez, it looked so fantastic. He just doubled on a ball in the air and it looked absolutely brilliant that he was moving it on so fast. But it was, I was actually particularly looking at this and it wasn't one the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it wasn't one where
but it looked fantastic the way it was just
You have so much more control when you have the ball in your hand. You can hand pass it, you can strike it long, strike it short. It's just the ground game at the moment, you just have so much less control of the ball. And it wouldn't have been something we worked on much in training, you know. When I first joined, it was you getting a line of three, puck along the ground, the man in the middle keeps the ball going. But that's the thing of the past, you know. I haven't seen a current team do that in a long, long time.
Right,
so.
Okay. Just we must do a show on drills.
Yeah. I can tell you some.
That's what I find, Michael, actually. I remember us doing the same thing. You'd definitely do. And the best part about it is we used to do it at the start of the session, probably without the warm up.
Exactly.
The science went on.
Would that warm up your shoulders and all, would it? No, would it kind of get the upper body warm?
It might injure it as well.
From where?
I just want to go back to 2 points there, Willie, that you met earlier on about how Limerick will approach the game. I think if you were playing a team in an All-Ireland that hadn't been in an All-Ireland for a long number of years, bear in mind, I think that this question or query is coming from a Limerick man, but you could switch this around. If you were playing a team that were going to be nervous in an All-Ireland, you might go for the juggler early on that. And bear in mind, Limerick did that, or Kilkenny did that to Limerick in an All-Ireland. So you might go for the juggler like that. But look, Galway are a very, very experienced team. You know, whether you have a lead or whether you're chasing the lead. And bear in mind, you know, Limerick have come behind in a lot of matches here, so they can play it either way. I'll just go back to the ground hurling. I think Ger probably stopped all of that. Ger Lochnan stopped, particularly out of the defence. You will definitely not ground hurl out of the defence. And if you were to go back and you think of Chaffetz Patrick and Ben O'Connor and some of these guys lurking around the middle of the field, Noel McGrath, hitting a ground ball up to them, you might as well give them the white flag and wave it. Mm-hmm. So you just can't do it. There probably are a couple of exceptions to that, and, you know, one player that would have been exceptional to that would have been John Try, who was able to control the direction of ground play. But very, very few players were able to change the direction and make sure that you're not going to lose the ball. And he was probably the last one I can remember.
Just an interesting one there. Obviously, football warm-ups, I don't want to get too much into it, but say you go out and say football go out and just start kicking points, obviously you could pull a hamstring or whatever. So if you go out and just start pucking the ball over the bar, would you have to warm up your upper body, or can you pull something just from pucking it, or is that unusual?
The majority of teams that I use it, Willie, would stand 10-15 yards apart pucking it into your hand for 10-15 minutes
to loosen out.
Can you
pull a muscle just from hitting it? You'd
well,
be too used to doing it.
No, because it doesn't take too much work. It's more wrist work. From 15-20, and then you gradually go maybe a width of a pitch.
Right.
And
but if you went for long distance without warming up, could you pull something?
No, I haven't seen many players doing it, to be honest with you, before a game. So I wouldn't know. Now I've never seen lads pull up before a game.
All right. No, that
ball.
just popped into my head.
Here's
another one here from Kieran Osuluan. Is having a solid county championship paramount to inter-county success? I say this as a tip man, fully aware of the oversized senior championship we have in operation in the county.
No is the answer. First of all, I mean, there's lots of times that the county championship mightn't have been the best county championship in that county, and yet the county won All-Irelands. But there's a different point here that I think the next Tipperary area manager is going to have to look at, and I made this point a number of months ago to do with Michael Ryan. The Tip Championship is there's actually probably 3 championships in Tip. There's the county championship, there's divisional championships, and there's a very, very strong league in it, and there's a couple of other competitions in it as well. And a lot of games take place in May, and I remember making this point back maybe around February, that one of the problems for Michael Ryan was trying to plot his way through the local county championships and give enough time to preparing his team for the league championship that was the Munster championship, because it was very, very different. So a lot of Tip players play a huge amount of matches, and somebody made the point recently of, even you take Turles Sarsfields at the minute, probably, I don't know, contribute maybe 5 or 6 players to the Tipperary team and maybe 7 or 8 or 9 to the panel, and they've won a lot of championships in the last couple of years, and they're probably going to be involved in the Munster championship. Paddy Maher, Ronan Maher, and a number of those are going to be playing probably 11 months of the year with very little downtime, very little rest period. So I think whoever is going to come in to tip is one of the things that they're going to have to look at. You know, how are we going to structure the county championship that allows enough time for me to prepare a tip team to plot a pathway through the Munster championship and get into a Munster final? Because at the start of the year, everybody was tipping tip, including myself, in terms of the talent I had. And there were a little bit of flat in a lot of matches. And who knows, but this might have been a contributing factor to that.
Does a manager have to be completely selfish? Does he have to almost say, I don't give a shit about the club championship in my own county? I'm going to be selfish for 2 years and go, that's not my concern. Like Jim McGuinness and Donegal, they closed everything off for him. And he's a big club man, was a manager of his own club and got them to a county title. So for him to do it, knowing how big a club man he is, to say, forget about it while we're doing it. I don't care if it's not ready for the Ulster club. We do you have to be completely selfish, Cheddar?
Well, look, you do need to be ruthless, simple as, and there's no apologies to anybody for that. You are given a job to do, and in Tipperary that is to win an All-Ireland. And anything that stands in your way, it just has to be removed. But I think, Ollie, take a step back from that. What do Tipperary supporters and Tipperary County Board and everybody else in Tipperary want? Do you want to win an All-Ireland? Because if you do, you need to get in behind that and give the team every chance. And
but then you have 90% of the playing population closed down for, well, the 10%.
That's the exact point I'm making. Yeah. What do you want? There's no point in blaming a manager then for not having the team properly prepared, because he simply hasn't had time to do it. That might have been all right for a long number of years, whereas you just played your standard training session and you might have probably got the same session in with your club. Yeah. You are now doing all tactical sessions at the right critical time that you don't have your players. And I would probably say that looking at Tipperary, the most critical thing Tipperary need to do is they need to have more sophistication in the way that they play. To do that needs rehearsal after rehearsal after rehearsal for game to game, not just necessarily a general game plan, but this is game to game. You're going to be playing with Waterford with a sweeper. You're going to be playing Clare with Tony Kelly going back to field. You're going to be playing Cork with Daniel Carnage as a third midfielder. You're going to be playing Limerick with a very, very sophisticated way of playing. How can you train your team and prepare your team to play each of those team Sunday after Sunday unless you have time to do it?
Yeah. I suppose when you say it like that, it's true. Like,
it's only when you finished with the intercounty bully you see how frustrating it is with the club.
Yeah,
the games are called
so
off.
The solution here is not to have them overlapping, is to end one and start the other. Because I do agree with Cheddar, like, you can't, from an intercounty managerial point of view, you just simply cannot be prepared if you're trying to break away to do something else. And then you've got the interclub rivalry, you could be fighting with a teammate, and you don't need to be dragging that back in. And that's just an extreme case, but like, still there's club rivalries there. Absolutely. you just don't want that coming into the whole kind of group.
You have to be ruthless. I completely agree, but it is frustrating as a club player when games are called off and you can hear disgruntledness around the club saying, what the hell? And you can see it even when intercounty players arrive back, there's that little bit of like, the hell with you, even though it's nothing to do with them.
Yeah,
like, they're not picking.
I fully agree with that, Michael. And I also fully agree that the club championship has to take place and all of that, but the two cannot go together.
No, and
certainly not a team,
not anymore,
certainly not a team that wants to win in All-Ireland.
You're right, because all the lads who are disgruntled will be the first lads sitting in a bar or going to the matches at the end of the year supporting their team. So it all goes out the window by the end of the year.
I don't think it's fair on anyone, because club players want to support their county. You don't want an us versus them. Nobody wants that. Stop overlapping. Yeah. Right, so last one here, lads, and I'll let you go, or one more after this. Do sideline cuts now, this is from Michael Whelan. You could say Michael Whelan's very like myself, a kind of a whinger. He says, do sideline cuts not slow the game down too much? Like, every Tom, Dick and Harry are having a go at them now. You're like, this actually sounds like something I would write. Every Tom, Dick and Harry are having a go at them now, and nothing worse than seeing them fly wide after waiting 2 minutes for them to take them. Well, he has a little bit of a point here.
Well, every Tom, Dick and Harry used to take them, but most teams have a specialist now. I remember my first year, they told me to take them. I was looking at the manager, I can't hit them. I can't. Yeah. It's not in my skill set. Like.
But the problem, there's a flip side of that, that every time Dick and Harry taken them, at least it's on your side. Yeah. So now if you have a specialist, he could be the far side of the field. So you have to wait for him to come over. He's to clean his hurl. He's to go through his routine.
Yeah.
That's a little bit annoying, that if there is only one lad taking them, that it can get a little. I always remember watching Mayo playing when Kieran MacDonald was on the field, and every free they'd get, no matter where it was, from the half back line up, he's taking it.
Yeah.
Jesus, what a stupid game. I know he's brilliant at it, but surely the fad of foul would have this gone long time before this lad's coming to take it.
Well, look, I think it's great. I think it's a great skill, and you'll find that most players, if you're winning and the tempo's high, they'll keep it going that way and they won't take too long over, no matter who you are. Like if Canning steps over a ball, if they're winning, he's going to look for a quick short ball if it's on. And the flip side of that is you use it to your advantage when you can then. Well, if you're losing and you want to slow the game down and someone's getting on top of you, and just it happens, but I think it's a great skill. I'd hate to see it lost, and I nearly would be an advocate of the 2 points for a point for it, because it's such a it is a special skill on the pitch.
I agree, you know, it's an incredible skill, and like anybody that hasn't been able to point free from sidelines or even get near the goals, take them and you'll find out how difficult it is to do. Very, very technical skill. I'd probably say, Willie, that it's going to be resolved over the next couple of years anyway in terms of where hurling is going, because I think what you will see is managers will be looking at the percentage of scores taken or got from sideline strikes that are taken, and they'll be saying, look, this is just not good enough, we need to recycle this ball better. And I think you'll see an awful lot more mobility in teams, and actually sidelines being taken very, very quickly. So the minute it goes over the line, I think you'll see mobility in your forward line, opening up space, popping the ball to space, and then moving on the game again. I think you know, it'll be resolved by something like that rather than maybe bringing in another rule to cure it.
Joe Canning did a great one actually. He took a quick one and took the return and put it over the bar, didn't he, against Clare last time? And whatever Joe can do it, even when he takes a quick, he gets it up off the ground. It pops up, and he did it with David Burke last year a couple of times.
It's in your possession, but have the ball,
but he doesn't scutter it along the ground. So he seems to be able to just chop it and get it up off the ground.
He's really good, but you have the ball. There's not many times in a hurling pitch where you have the ball, and it used to be a thing of just hit it as far as you can, but as Shedder said, it's going to evolve, and you just can't give a ball away cheaply anymore on a pitch, because a fella can score from a bad sideline, you know. It's going to evolve from there.
Okay, exactly. Right, last one. So this is from Owen Ford, and he says, saw this recently while reading Stephen King's new book. Question for Cheddar is, does a literary genius and a hurling genius exist on a different level than the rest of us? Did the line of the Stephen King's book that he's underlined in the tweet to send to me, he says, don't try teaching your daddy how to suck eggs.
I can sit back and watch.
So this is Stephen King thinks it's your daddy and you think it's your granny, Cheddar. So I don't know who has the deciding
how to answer that one, Woolly. The only thing I'll say is it's not great that Stephen King is listening to the Woolly podcast for literary inspiration.
Right, lads, I think we'll leave it there on that. That's a perfect note to end the show on. Right, we'll be back on Wednesday and we'll preview the All-Ireland final. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because like I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.